Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Andy German, the King Vike, recently named new second all-time head coach of the Cleveland State Vikings, one of the newest programs on the Division I men's lacrosse scene. Coach German, congratulations, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate you having me. It's an exciting time here in Cleveland. Obviously, as a Cleveland guy yourself, right? It's all circling around Cleveland here, so it's the best time of year for us. So I'm fired up for everything that's going on here.
Absolutely. And so to begin, I kind of want to talk about what this summer was like. Dylan Sheridan takes a job to become an assistant coach at Ohio State, and questions swirl around who his successor will be. You had been with him since the founding of the program, and certainly have intimate familiarity of both this team, this university, the culture of both the university and the program, but also the lacrosse ecosystem beyond. And so when I heard that you'd been elevated head coach, I was really, really excited, and I found it to be really fortunate for the team. So can you describe what it was like from your perspective to be a part of that and kind of experience it unfold?
And in some ways it's a bit hard to put into words, but it's just not something I think our industry is familiar with in a lot of ways. You know, sometimes there's a head coach leaving for another head job, and maybe his assistants go with them, or you know, somebody just gets out of the business altogether, and we've seen that over the years. This one was a bit unique, and it didn't surprise me that, you know, people called Dylan, obviously his success at, you know, Denver and then Princeton, and obviously what he was able to build here, you know, in some ways what we were able to build here, has been awesome. And so it didn't surprise me that, you know, somebody came knocking at his door. You know, and when he told me the news that he left, I was really happy for him. You know, he's a smart guy. He's really, really sharp. And I know that you've gotten to know him, over the years. And so I knew that if he was going to leave Cleveland State, it was going to be for something that he really believes in. And, you know, once that all kind of wears off and, you know, you're kind of sitting there and you're thinking, and it's, you know, in some ways your panic starts to set in a little bit, you know, but in a lot of ways I just had to suppress that and move forward. And just, I know I was named the interim head coach for a little bit, but I just plowed ahead as if I was the head coach, and, the recruiting didn't stop, and, you know, we were on the road, we were in the office, we were given, you know, having recruiting visits, and we were getting some young men that we were down the road with to commit. And, you know, in some ways I just acted as such, and I was fortunate enough to, you know, be named the head coach a few weeks later. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said that it was all roses all summer. You know, it was definitely an interesting few weeks, just in terms of, okay, if it's not going to be me, then who's it going to be? And, am I able to stay on? And, you know, obviously, my wife and my little guy, it's, you know, what's next? Not to mention there were some other assistant jobs open. And so if it wasn't going to be me here, you know, do I need to get my name out there, and do I need to, you know, be poking around some of the openings that, from the an assistant standpoint, came up this summer? Because, you know, there's some really good jobs out there, and it was definitely an interesting one. But I'm excited and, you know, fortunate that everything, you know, worked out for me and my family here at Cleveland State.
And one of the things that makes the situation maybe even a little bit more uncertain was that Scott Garrett arrived as athletic director in April. So I have to imagine that wasn't as if he was overly familiar with the program or with you. And, you know, all of a sudden he gets thrust into making this decision. So can you just kind of give us a little bit of a sense of your sense of how kind of it might have unfolded from the other side in terms of the way that the department identified you as the right leader?
Yeah, and I certainly don't want to, you know, speak for Scott, but our interactions, I've actually been very fortunate. My I guess old office, the assistant coaches for the lacrosse team, their office is right next to the athletic director here in the building. And so I got to know Scott, you know, pretty well for those few months. And he was able during the interview process and things like that to familiarize himself with lacrosse and what our program has meant to the university, on the field, off the field, from a fundraising perspective. And so I felt like I had maybe more of a relationship with him than some others, just because of the proximity, you know, to him on a daily basis. And so when this all unfolded, you know, he shot me an email right away. Hey, you know, it was a Monday night or a Tuesday, and, you know, said, let's meet soon, which was great. And my conversation with him at that point was pretty candid. And I was pretty open and he was really open. And, you know, he just told me to keep plowing away here. And that was great. And he's been great since he's arrived here. The energy in the department has been sky high. You know, we have a new men's basketball coach and some of the, he's hired a deputy AD, Tyler Jones from Ohio State. And he's been fantastic. And he actually oversees men's lacrosse. And so it's all been very positive, but you know, yeah, you don't know, you know, Scott doesn't, he came from Kansas State. He didn't have any experience with lacrosse. He's kind of been in the Midwest, for most of his, really, I guess all of his career. And so none of the schools he's worked at, it was a lacrosse school, and Kansas State doesn't have it. And he was, you know, big into tickets and fundraising and football at Kansas State. So yeah, you definitely worry a little bit. You know, I don't know who else had kind of poked around the job or had called him or what. I was never privy to that information. But certainly from my end, you just never know, right? I don't think he would ever, you know, leave Denver, but you know, maybe Coach Tierney calls and he's interested in Cleveland State. And now it's like, you know, maybe I'm out of luck, but it was all very positive in a lot of ways. And he was very supportive. You know, when we were getting kids committed and things like that, he was always, you know, stop in the office and say, great job. What can I do to help you? If you need anything, let me know. And that was really positive in a lot of ways.
So what was it like in terms of how you communicated with the team, both over the course of the summer and then arriving back on campus and saying, hey guys, you know me, but I'm in a new role now?
Yeah. So I'll take it back to the summer. And I was actually driving back to Cleveland, when Dylan had reached out to the team. You know, he wanted to get ahead of any news coming, you know, whether it was from Twitter or an announcement here or there. And so he emailed the team. I knew that was coming. It probably happened a little bit sooner than any of us wanted. And, I was driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike coming back from, my parents' house in Philadelphia. And, I just had to immediately pull off the side of the highway, you know, nearest rest stop. I spent probably about an hour, you know, fielding calls from some players, and there were some other coaches who had called, which I really appreciate, just to kind of, you know, check on me, see how I was doing. And so it was interesting. I had an email ready to go. So I let coach's email kind of, marinate for a little bit, give the guys a few hours. And then I hit them with an email and just basically told them the situation. I was on my way back to Cleveland. I had a meeting with the athletic director. And when I know more, I will relay that message. But if they needed anything, call, text, whatever it was. And I heard from virtually all of them, you know, and they were voicing their support, which was really comforting. Unfortunately, I just didn't have an answer for them. And some parents had called and the whole thing. So it was a bit hectic. I kind of described it as I felt like I was on the phone for 50 hours of, you know, the past 48. I was just on the phone answering emails, texts, calls. And so it was a bit hectic. In saying that, the best thing that happened for, I think, for all of us was when the guys got back on campus. you know, we were able to get our guys back, the upperclassmen helped the underclassmen move in. We had a team meeting, and right, we had that conversation that you just mentioned. You know, in some ways I was, you know, kind of the go-between, you know, with some guys between themselves and Coach Sheridan, and I can't be that guy anymore. It doesn't mean that I don't love you any less. It doesn't mean that I'm not here for you. You know, but I now have to be the guy to make those tough decisions if they need to be made. And, you know, I think having such a big senior class, obviously this is our first class coming through here, they understood it. They get it. And they've been respectful of that from the start. But yeah, those are real conversations that you have to have with the team and just say, look, I'm in a different role, and really put it back on them that they're in a different role too, right? You're a group of seniors. You guys are in the same thing, that you're in a different role, just like I'm in a different role, and we're all going to grow and figure this out together. It's been a really good 3 weeks, or, you know, almost 4 weeks being back. And like I said, it was the best thing to happen for all of us is turning that page from what was a bit of a hectic summer into, you know, what we're all comfortable with, right? The routine of, you know, getting up fresh in the morning, lifting weights, going to class, you know, that whole thing is what we all love and why we do it. And so getting back to that was the best thing for all involved.
So I want to shift to talk about what this job is right now, because one of the things that I think people didn't realize or don't realize is that by that, you know, adjusted efficiency metric, Cleveland State was the 37th best team in college lacrosse. Now, in some regards, maybe people would not be impressed by that, but I am incredibly impressed by that. It means that you are better than nearly half of the teams that play college lacrosse. And for a third-year program, that is a remarkable feat. And when you consider some of the teams that rank behind you in that metric, including an NCAA tournament team in UMBC and, you know, two teams in Marquette and Harvard that notably made coaching changes in the offseason, you know, it's again, it's remarkable. What do you say about what this job is right now?
It's really special in a lot of ways. When Dylan and I started this thing, we went the basically all freshman route. We had one junior college transfer, and then everybody else was freshmen. We didn't do the transfer thing. We didn't bring in older guys. There was no graduate player. It was 36 freshmen, and then you know, Parise Williams, who came to us from Baltimore by way of North Carolina, and so. To now see these guys grow the way they have, that corny saying, right, boys to men, it's so true, and it's so unique to what we're doing here. You know, these guys were freshmen, right? Our first road game was against Duke, you know, back in 2017. And to see how far they've come, and not just in the lacrosse sense, but in life, right? They, you know, they're in relationships, and they have apartments downtown, and they're, you know, they have full-time jobs set up, or they're going to law school. They're, you know, they're doing just amazing things. And for me to be a part of that from the recruiting process and all the way through, is really, really special, and really unique, to this job. Because I don't know, you know, you look at some other programs, everybody kind of builds a new program differently. But to be here from the start, now to see these guys through to graduation come May is really special to me. And I know the success on the field and the stats and things that you speak about is phenomenal, right? It's a testament to the hard work our guys have put in and really the, you don't want to say to stay with it, but just the continued growth, right? Don't get down, right? Yeah, we're going to go to Duke for our first road game. It's not going to go well. We're going to go Virginia midweek in April of our first year, right? It's not going to go well. But then Duke's going to come back the following year, and it's going to be a little bit closer. You know, we're going to go to Penn State our first 2 years, and it's going to be tough. But then they're going to come to Cleveland in year three, and it's going to be a couple of goal game in the third quarter. And that stuff's all really positive. You know, but, you know, it probably sounds a bit of a cliche, but the work that they've done off the field is even more impressive. And I'm really, really proud of them. And so this job, to back to your question, is really special to me. And I don't know that anybody that would come in, you know, if I didn't get the job would understand, some of these things that the guys have gone through and the growth. And, you know, there was nobody here to show them the way, right? We didn't have, you know, there was one junior, and, you know, to see these guys now, you know, living in Cleveland and getting jobs in Cleveland, it's really special.
So what does that mean for the message that your players are bringing to practice every day in terms of what they want to accomplish this spring?
Yeah, well again, right, we've really never had seniors, right? Paris was the only senior, and so there's a sense of urgency about what we're doing. You know, and again, you don't go into every practice saying, you know, this is the last practice of the second week of fall ball. You know, it's just, this is it, fellas, right? There's no next year, for this group. And that message has, you know, really kind of sunk into these guys, and that, you know, from the moment we start, let's get after it and let's get everything we got, because we don't get to do this next year. And sometimes when you're a sophomore, you may take a couple practices for granted because, you know, you have next week, you have next month, you have next year. These guys are now understanding that urgency. And I think when you look at some of the teams that have success in the NCAA tournament, you know, or just success in general, a lot of times it's that senior class that's leading the way because they understand how fragile this thing is. And, you know, in just a few months or a few weeks that, you know, it's kind of over and everybody kind of gets on with things and goes a different way. And so the way those guys have approached the fall here, and I know what their goals are for the spring is something we've never dealt with before. And so it's all kind of new to us, but the way they're going about their business is really impressive.
So let's shift gears to learn a little bit more about the steps that you took to get to this point. Where are you from? Where'd you play? How'd you get into coaching lacrosse?
Let's talk about our guys. No, I am from, like I said, I'm from Philadelphia. I grew up Western suburbs. I went to Radnor High School. From there, I went to Alfred University up in Western New York, Empire 8th School at the time. I was there for 2 years, then actually came back and ended up graduating from Villanova. When I transferred, I lost a few credits, so I ended up having to do an extra year at Villanova to graduate. And in that time, I was doing some real estate work. And if you can think back to that time, right, that was the financial crisis and everything. It was probably the worst time for a young guy out of college to get into the real estate world. And so as that year was going on, I wanted to get back into lacrosse. I wanted to get back into the game in some capacity. And obviously at that point, it's going to be the coaching route. And so I started poking around some grad assistant jobs, and nothing fell for me. And then I ended up getting a call from Coach Corrado, who I just played for at Villanova. And he said he was sitting on the sideline with Coach Moan, the head coach at Susquehanna University, and he was looking for an assistant and if I'd be interested. Went up to Stealings Grove, PA, met with Coach Moan, you know, fortunate enough to get that opportunity. And I was, you know, living in central PA 2 weeks later and spent 2 years with Coach Moan and then got an opportunity to go back to Villanova. I was at Villanova for about 4.5 years, before I took a job at St. Joe's Prep, in Philadelphia, for that 2015 season. And then, I came out to Cleveland in July of 15 with Dylan. And so that was the path. And, my intentions weren't to get into coaching. It was more of coach and whether it was athletic administration or teaching or what have you, as I coached with Coach Moan, I just got the bug. It was so much fun, and to see Coach Moen operate the way he did in building Susquehanna up, I just enjoyed the heck out of it. And so to continue to be able to do that now, you know, all these years later, I feel really fortunate. And those guys are, I'm still in touch with Coach Moen, and you know, and his family is awesome. And obviously Coach Corrado and Simon down at Villanova are, you know, still very, very close to me. And so I've been very fortunate along the way. Some of these coaches and mentors and friends, it's been a good run for me. I've been very lucky.
How do you describe your style as a coach?
Style as a coach, I think I always, no matter playing, coaching, I always enjoy the best part of my day is getting out there with the guys. I guess maybe I take that back, right? Until I had my son, right? Going home and being able to hang out with him and is the best part of the day. But I've always loved playing, and it's always been having fun. I always felt I played my best when we were just enjoying playing. And so I want to give guys freedom to play, to make mistakes, to try to make plays, and really just think about, all right, I didn't make that one, I got to make the next one. You know, I think every now and then, right, the team needs a little, you know, kick in the backside, and whether we need to run to refocus or whether, you know, we need to talk about some things, that's all part of it. But ultimately, when at the end of the day, we need to be enjoying what we're doing, right? I need to go out there. I need to have fun. I need the guys to have fun. You know, we have music playing. We play fast. You throw the ball. Don't slam your stick on the ground. Don't put your palms up. Don't say my bad. Just ride the ball back. And that, you know, it's something that I've always been into. And last year, the team really took to it, even, you know, with Coach Sheridan here. And, you know, we led the country in opponent clearing percentage, right, which is in theory riding. And so that's who I am. And I think as I took on the job and I was able to talk to some different coaches, that's just me. And I can't be Dylan, right? And I can't be Coach Corrado, and I can't be Coach Moen. I can take a little bit of everything I've learned from these guys, but at the end of the day, I need to be myself. And so we're going to have some fun. We're going to, you know, try to play as fast as we can, and we're going to make mistakes, and it's, you know, it's going to be a little hectic at times. But ultimately I want the kids and the kids, I want the guys, every time they go out, you know, they leave the locker room and they get out on the field, for that to be the best 90 minutes of their day. And to enjoy the crap out of it, not to go out there thinking, you know, I got to grip my stick a little bit tighter because I don't want to get yelled at, or I don't want to try to make a play. Go make a play. And, you know, really some of this stems from, you know, not just who I am as a person, but in our down year, right? So when we didn't have a team in 15 and 16, Coach and I went up to see Brown and Tufts. And when Coach Lars Tiffany was at Brown and Coach Daly was at Tufts, and, you know, we were able to sit on a day with those guys. And, you know, both guys talked about, you know, having to enjoy letting guys make plays, moving on to the next one. And that's really stuck with me over the years. And I'm excited to see what our guys can do. And, you know, they got a ton of experience, and you know, maybe let them go a little bit here. It's going to be a lot of fun this year. You know, maybe a little hectic at times, but we'll rein it in at some point. But let's have some fun, and our guys have done that here for the first few weeks.
What have you found is the biggest difference or the biggest transition that you've had to make moving from being an assistant to a head coach?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. I think there's a lot of things. I think one of the things that I've learned from Coach Sheridan, his communication with the guys was unbelievable. He was in constant communication with the team, with the staff. And when you're, you know, an assistant, you're in constant communication with the team, but maybe it's, you know, more individuals. And you don't need to frame your message as much as when you're the head coach, and right, you're addressing the team every day and things like this. And so, you know, for me, it's making sure I'm organized in my message to the guys. you know, whether it's about community service or career services, you know, how we carry ourselves in the dorms, you know, whatever it is, I had to be better at that. I had to become better at that and become better quickly at it. And I don't know if I'm good at it now. You'd probably have to ask my guys, but you know, I've tried to be in constant communication with our guys in some way, and just, you know, even if it's just have a great night, you know, or, hey, just a heads up, there's a volleyball game, you know, tomorrow night at 7:00, let's make sure that we're out there supporting our fellow athletes. Just little things that coach was awesome with. And I think it just reiterates to the guys that, you know, we care about you, you know, we love you. Here's some, you know, here's a little message, here's a little note. I think that stuff goes a long way. And, I've had to be better at that quickly. Because I think it was a pillar of what, you know, he did here, and something I definitely need to make sure that we keep going with.
It's a really interesting message relative to, you know, I can picture the end of practice huddle where, you know, typically assistants are on the perimeter, making sure that everybody's paying attention and, you know, maybe answering a question, versus when you're a head coach, you're the one that everybody's huddled around. And what you decide to say is literally the tone for the team and for the program. And I can imagine that, you know, it's a really fun and exciting responsibility, but at the same time, you know, it's a stark transition, right? You know, it's kind of one moment you're not doing that, and the next moment you are. And the idea that if you don't do it, no one's going to do it, is the reality. And that's the nature of the job. So it's really well illustrated in that regard.
Yeah, it is one of those things that you have to think about, right? As an assistant, right? And I did it for years, and, you know, right, in some ways, that's just where I was comfortable. You know, the coach would say, hey, you know, you got anything for the guys about practice, or any notes for the guys? Then you can talk about practice, right? You can just talk about what you saw out there, or point a guy out for a positive, or, you know, talk about what's coming up, you know, as the head guy, right? You got to be a bit more organized. You got to put a little bit more thought into what you're doing. And it was one thing that Dylan was great at, right? He's just so prepared, you know, with his notes, with his message, how he wanted, right? Like you just said, the tone, of things. And so it is a bit unique, right? And I spent a lot of post practices along that perimeter, you know, and sometimes you say nothing. And that's totally good. But you're right. The head coach always says something and always kind of sets that tone, whether it's before practice or after practice. And so you need to just put a little bit more thought into what you're doing, be a little bit more prepared than maybe it happened in the past. Because the guys are all looking at you, right? They're not looking at anybody else. They're looking right at you. And it is a big responsibility, but it's my job, and I need to make sure that, you know, I'm conveying, right? There's an organization, there's a thought, everything we're doing, right? There's a reason we're doing it, not just kind of winging it.
Well, Andy German, you certainly didn't wing it on this podcast. Well done. Very impressive performance. We appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations on the new role. We hope that you're enjoying the fall, and good luck the rest of the way. Look forward to seeing you at some point over this fall, and certainly as we turn our attention to the spring of 2020. Can't wait to catch the Vikings on the field.
Awesome. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate your time.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.